Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated, visit MySpecialMortgage.com. That's MySpecialMortgage.com.
It's Football at 4 with Big Al and D-Mac on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Stats don't mean a whole lot after two games. I don't know if stats in the NFL really even matter until after four games, a quarter of the season, and then you can sort of see really a good example of what's what. But there is an interesting number for the Ravens. Even after two games, it's interesting. Alfred, they are perfect in the red zone. They are, and I know they had the Bills, and then they, you know, they lost against Cincinnati, but they're perfect. They're 100%, 9-for-9 in the red zone, scoring touchdowns. That's, That's an impressive number. VJ, about that.
Yes, I mean, here.
Yeah.
9-for-9.
9-for-9, 100%.
Yes, the first team in 20 years that's been that way. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So how do you do?
No, I mean, we've kind of figured out what we're good at in the red zone the last 2 weeks, and that's helped us play better there. But obviously, they're 9-for-9. It's the first team in 20 years to be that way in the first two games. That's amazing. They're running the football. They're passing the football. So it's going to be a challenge, but we're looking forward to the challenge.
The Broncos are 60%, tied for 13th in the league. So, I mean, not terrible. Pretty good, actually. But that's pretty impressive, don't you think?
Yeah, considering how little starting quarterbacks play in the preseason, to have that kind of continuity and that kind of game planning, it is special.
I mean, even against the Bills, too. I mean, I know you worked them, but not even just a field goal. You didn't. You got over on everybody once you got in the red zone. It's not. You know, it's 9 times. That's impressive. If you just went 9 times in a row in the red zone at any point, that would be amazing. To start off the year 9-for-9. Not to bum everybody out there, but it's an impressive number, and it's something that the Broncos are going to have to be a little stingy with. The Broncos defensively are 50% on red zone defense, tied for 12th in the league. That means, I mean, yeah, the sample size is small, but when the Ravens get in scoring position, they, let's think about it, score. So, the Broncos offense, not so much, but even 60, I would take 60%. 60% is pretty good to me. If the Broncos stay 60% in scoring touchdowns in the red zone, that's going to be a good year. Well, if the Ravens go, I mean, you know, they did lose a game, but that's impressive. Very impressive.
Yeah, last Thursday, and, you know, when you're playing that well, you don't want to have a 10-day layoff. You know, they've been playing well, but
they didn't play that well on Thursday.
Listen, dude, I'm just saying.
Kind of worked.
Well, that part of that 9-for-9. Now, remember, now they played opening weekend, and then they played 4 days later. I mean, that all just basically came in like 1 week of football. I mean, it's two weekends, but it's really just one.
What do you think? Rest is going to be bad for them? Come on, Al.
Let me tell you something.
Is a bye week bad for teams?
Early in the year? Yes, it is.
Oh, come on.
If you're playing well, you don't want it early in the year.
Okay.
Like when we had our bye week, everything went to hell right after that.
Well, that's true.
You know, so if you're playing well, you just want to keep, because what coaches usually do is they talk themselves into doing something that isn't necessarily right for the team because they've shown this. Now I want to show that. No, just keep doing your thing. So we'll see how this works out. I think we are more talented than the Ravens. Everything about them says that they are a good team offensively. They're a good team offensively, not with a real star at any one position, except maybe even at quarterback. They really don't have real superstars on that team offensively. They have a lot of just really good players, like Michael Crabtree, really good player. I mean, he had a hell of a touchdown last week where Joe Flacco dropped it in. I mean, just a beautiful, beautiful play. But there are a lot of really good players, no great players on that team at all. At no position do they have a top five player for the Baltimore Ravens.
Pecco had a vet day today. Valdir was out there with a helmet but didn't practice. Brandon Marshall didn't practice. That's 2 days in a row. He's got a knee injury. Adam Jones, Pac-Man, did not practice either. Any of those injuries concern you?
The one that really concerns me is
it's really
Adam
just
Jones.
Brandon Marshall and Pac-Man.
Yeah, Adam Jones and, you know, when Brandon Marshall went out the game.
Why does Adam Jones' injury concern you?
Because he was out there best corner.
When?
To start the year.
You sure?
There's no doubt about it. Look at the play count.
Jamie Moyer was our third best corner, huh? Okay.
Listen, I'm just telling you. In game one against Russell Wilson, he played 64% of the snaps. They're telling you that he is our third best corner.
Jamie Moyer was our fourth best pitcher.
I hear you, buddy.
And he earned the spot.
Well,
you know what?
We were 2-0 with him in there. You know? You don't like him, but we're 2-0 with the guy.
He didn't play the second half.
Well,
he
played
hurt.
The first half.
Quote.
2-0 with the guys that we have. And you still don't like him. That's crazy. But
it's
anyway,
really not that crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
You know it's really not that crazy.
It is crazy because
he got a holding call. They took him out of the game. He was getting beat like a drum in the first half, and then they played.
He's injured. Like, apparently, he's injured.
Okay, all right. So it's not that crazy.
It was the same. Same thing that I'm recalling from his last year in Cincinnati.
Okay,
an injury that held him out.
Not that crazy. Not that crazy. And if he's really the third best, That's a Jamie Moyer situation.
Yadam needs to play. He probably will play this week.
So your concerns about Jones, and then Brandon Marshall.
No, I'm not concerned about punt return.
No, because he's only averaged like 3 yards per return, so that's not a big deal.
Because
but he hasn't made any mistakes on him.
Okay. Well, I think that when you consider the linebacker position, tight ends running wide open. And
I'm much more concerned about Brandon Marshall with Josie Jewell filling
because,
in. Concerned than Adam Jones.
Because what happens is, you know, with Brandon Marshall out, then that means Todd Davis plays more. And Todd Davis
He's a captain.
Yeah, but he's not a captain that plays three downs.
When we come back, Dennis Pitta is on the radio broadcast. You remember Dennis Pitta, right?
Oh, yeah. One of my fantasy guys.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Love the tight end.
What fantasy league was that?
One that you're not in.
Dennis Pitta will join us next.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage Special Circumstance Lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web, 303-790-2222, the phone number. SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
You're listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac on Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Crowd rising on 3rd and 10 at the 14. Flacco out of the gun, takes the snap, has time, backpedaling, throws near side, caught, touchdown. Dennis Pitta, the tight end, and the Ravens, for the first time today, have the lead.
Well, let's look at the enemy. That's the Ravens this time around. Dennis Pitta, former Ravens tight end, is an analyst for the Ravens radio broadcast on 1090 AM WBAL and 98 Rock 97.9 FM with Jerry Sandusky play-by-play and former Bronco Justin Forsett. I think he played like 2 games for the Broncos. Dennis, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How you doing, guys?
We're doing good. I've been dying to ask you one question for many, many years, so I hope you will indulge me on this, and then we can get to football. How often do you get misrecognized for Luke Wilson?
I've had that comparison quite a lot. I get Luke Wilson. I've actually gotten Aaron Rodgers a few times before as well.
Both very complimentary, but I mean, so what do you do? Somebody, how does it happen that somebody thinks you're Luke Wilson?
I've been approached in stores before, and they thought I was Luke Wilson. Mostly it's my friends and family that give me a hard time about it, that I look like him. But I don't see the resemblance really in Luke Wilson.
Okay. But that being said, it's hardly an insult to be, you know, compared to a handsome Hollywood superstar. But it's just something that's occurred to me. That being said, the Ravens this year, we're looking at kind of an impressive stat, and stats are kind of weird in the first 2 weeks, but 100% in the red zone on offense, 9 for 9. What's that success due to, do you think, Luke? Dennis, sorry.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, like you mentioned, it's early on in the season. I don't know how much weight you can put into a lot of these statistics, but that's certainly a good one. This is an offense that struggled last year. They were bottom half of the league in scoring offense, bottom half of the league in passing and efficiency and all those kinds of stats. And so they will certainly welcome this stat. I know that they've had a great offseason. Joe Flacco has a lot of new weapons at receiver, at tight end. And so he's got some red zone targets now and guys that can make plays for him that I don't think he really had last year. And so I think that's one of the differences when you look at this team versus what they put on the field last year.
You know, one of the guys that I've been paying particular attention to, and he hasn't gone nuts yet, but I think he will, is a guy that plays the same position you once played, and that's Mark Andrews, a guy that I thought was clearly the best tight end in college football last year when he was at Oklahoma. But, you know, he has type 1 diabetes, and the NFL graded him down. But it seems like the Ravens love this guy. They split him out, and they trust him to go get the football.
Yeah, I think he's been impressive over the last few weeks of the season. And really, it's interesting because the Ravens drafted two tight ends. Mark Andrews was the second tight end selected by them in the third round. And they drafted a first-round tight end, Hayden Hurst. And if you watched those two through the offseason and through training camp, it was really Hayden Hurst that emerged as the pass threat that the Ravens were looking for. Mark Andrews struggled a little bit early on in camp and didn't really find his way till maybe the last preseason game or the last two preseason games. And then Hayden Hurst, of course, goes down with an injury, has a foot fracture, and Mark Andrews is kind of steps into that forefront as the tight end starter and has played very well. And so it'll be interesting when in a week or two here, when Hayden Hurst is healthy again and comes back in the lineup, how they shuffle those two, because both are very good players and both add a lot of value to this offense.
Dennis Pitta is our guest. Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson. What's that relationship like, and what's that done for Joe this season?
Well, I think a lot of the early talk was overblown in their relationship. I know Joe didn't have any issue with Lamar being drafted, even though it was reported otherwise. You know, anytime you draft somebody at your position in the first round, you understand what that means, and especially at the quarterback position. So Joe certainly uses that as motivation, in my opinion. He's had a tremendous, tremendous camp, has started the season really strongly. And so to say that it hasn't been motivation for him than drafting Lamar, I think that wouldn't be true. But, you know, he's downplayed it a little bit, the impact of Lamar there. But listen, they're two very different players. And as you've seen over the first 2 weeks of the season, they use Lamar in a variety of roles and not necessarily a quarterback. Most of the time he's split out as a receiver. They bring him in motion on fly sweeps, on reverses. He's done a little bit behind center, running some of the zone read stuff. But he is a very raw pocket passer at this time, and certainly not at the level where he needs to be a full-time starter. And so Joe certainly isn't worried about his job right now, because he knows his role on this team, and he's a tremendous pocket passer. And Lamar just adds a little bit of different versatility that they can work in on offense right now.
I want to ask you about the head football coach and what it's like playing for John Harbaugh. He seems like a very detailed, button-down guy, no-nonsense, a solid NFL coach, but you've been in that locker room. You understand his personality. What is he like to play for?
Well, I think you kind of hit it on the head. He's a very detailed, hard-nosed football coach, and he comes from kind of an old-school mentality. His dad, Jack Harbaugh, was a football coach with Bo Schembechler. His brother, obviously, Jim, has been a football coach for a long time. And they all kind of cut from the same cloth, the Schembechler way of thinking. And so we practice physical. It's all about physicality. It's all about toughness. That's the kind of players he wants in his team. And that's what's constantly preached there for the Ravens. So you see year in and year out a tough, disciplined, detailed team. I mean, he's an incredible coach because of the level of detail that he has at practice and throughout the entire organization. So You're going to see a team that's well-prepared each and every game, and you're going to see a team that plays with tremendous effort and physicality, and that's just the mark of a Coach Harbaugh team.
Dennis Pitta, our guest. Dennis, where were you when Raheem Moore gave you guys the Super Bowl?
I was on the field. I was running down the seam, and I was pretty open in my own right. Joe didn't see me. And bought some time and threw it down there to Jacoby, because I don't think I would have scored like Jacoby did. So,
could you believe it? What was it like? I mean, obviously great for you guys, but you must have been as shocked as everybody else, right?
Well, it was shocking, yeah, because yeah. I think there was under 30 seconds left. We didn't have a timeout. We had really no way to stop the clock.
Right.
It was a last desperate effort. And so when Raheem Moore jumped up and mistimed the ball so badly, it was a shock to everybody. You just don't see that happen very often, especially at that level. And so we definitely are not afraid to admit we got lucky in that circumstance. But I think any good Super Bowl run requires a little bit of luck at times. And then we played well at the right times when we needed to. So we're certainly happy for how that game turned out, and one we'll never forget.
Did the same person that arranged for Raheem Moore to blow that play turn off the power in the Superdome? I mean, was it the... See, it's funny that you say luck, because you could say you were a team of destiny more than you were lucky. You must have heard that before, that it was more of a destiny thing for things to go well for you guys.
Yeah, I think you can make that argument. It was Ray Lewis's last season. He came out and announced that it would be his last run in the postseason, and so we had a lot to play for. We had a lot of motivation going into that postseason. But listen, whether you want to call it destiny or luck, I mean, personally, I think we got a little bit lucky on that play. Mm-hmm. Just don't see that kind of a mistake at that level very often, and especially in that critical of a situation to finish a game. And so, I mean, personally, I call it luck. I mean, I don't know if you can argue the destiny thing too much, but. We're happy any way you want to look at it. We're happy how it turned out.
Of course. Well, anything else, Al? Yeah.
I got to ask you quickly. You've been around the starting quarterback for this team for a long time in Joe Flacco. Mm-hmm. Now, it looks like he has slimmed down. He looks like he is more polished, and he's ready for work this year. Does he look like he is in better shape and competing at a different level this year?
Well, he is, and I think he'll tell you it's really because of where his health was at this offseason. You look at 2 years ago, he was coming off an ACL injury. He didn't get to participate really through much of the offseason and was limited in training camp. And so it's tough to go into a season when you're not fully healthy and you don't get the time to prepare like you normally would. And then you look at last season. He didn't play in any of the preseason. Sat out most of training camp because he had a back issue, and that lingered through the first part of last season. And so you look at the last two seasons, and I know a lot of people have criticized Flacco for his play over those seasons and really post-Super Bowl, but he really hasn't been healthy. And I think that's one thing you can point to is he's had a tremendous offseason. He's been healthy. He's been able to work hard and get his body right and practice and prepare all offseason. I think a lot of times people underestimate the importance of that and playing in the preseason, being able to get your feet under you, get your vision and everything right as a quarterback to be able to step in the regular season and play at a high level. And so he's able to do that, and he looks tremendous so far in the season.
Hey, we really appreciate you being on with us, Dennis. You enjoying the radio gig?
Yeah, it's been fun. I've enjoyed it. It'll be my second season now with the Ravens, and I'm enjoying being a part of things still. You know, my career ended abruptly with another hip injury, and so I was fortunate enough to be able to do this and stay a part of it a little bit, which I've enjoyed.
Well, right on. We really appreciate your time,
and
Dennis.
I do want to say, man, you were one of my favorite players. As a former player playing outside linebacker and defensive end in this league, it was good to see you out there playing when you were playing. Sorry that the career didn't last longer, but, man, I really respect the way that you played.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you, Dennis Pitta. You're my boy, Blue.
What? I did like him.
Okay. We'll take a quick break. We'll digest all that. Joe Flacco. You know, people are still upset with us about our Joe Flacco comments.
Well, you know.
Well, you know what? We can address that. We can take a deep breath. now that I brought it back every horrible memory possible. I mean, as long as I'm doing that, I might as well do this.
This ball is hammered to left center field. And he's done it again.
Okay, this is the Drive on the Fan.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac.
Do you have those Boston guys now? Did you find that audio, Big Sexy? All right, we'll get to our Joe Flacco stuff in a second. Al, I got to play you this audio. It's kind of going a little viral today. There's two ding-dongs from, like, Somerville or someplace in Boston, near Boston. First of all, they sound like they're totally stoned, but they found a banner, like a banner that would hang off of a wall or outside of Fenway Park where it says, yeah, I think it's just 2018, and then it's the Red Sox logo, and then just says Boston Red Sox. I mean, it's just, it fell off a truck. It literally fell off a truck, and they found it in the middle of the road.
Well, it was celebrating the divisional championship.
Oh, okay. They could make, like, you know, 100 of these. It wasn't that special. But listen to these two guys who found this banner. It's like they're holding it hostage. Listen.
Now, we have our coffee run. We're driving on McGrath Highway in Somerville. And I noticed a couple cars swinging, like, moving to the right. And we seen something in the street. And he's like, Louie, what is that? What is it? I'm like, I don't know. I don't. What is it?
Oh, my God.
So I ran across the highway to grab it.
It's totally safe.
We brought it in the car. We had no idea what it was.
Boston.
It was wrapped up in a brown paper bag.
Oh, my God.
First thing I said, this belongs to the Red Sox.
Oh.
This is Fenway Park. Yeah. Like, how do we have this? Like, nobody made this. This belongs to the park. I'm thinking that they hang it off the Green Monster.
Yep.
We want to give it back to them because it belongs to them, and it doesn't belong to us.
Yeah.
But in reciprocation, we would like, you know, maybe to go to a nice playoff game. Or see, we're looking for something. We just don't want to hand it over to them.
Right. I mean,
need to negotiate here. We want to, we're looking for, like, you know.
We're working, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my mystery lane's traffic.
We know that that's the original one.
We were told there was only one made.
Yeah, we were told there was only one band made.
At that point, that tells us. But then they told us they had a duplicate.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
if they do try to put a duplicate up, you best believe we're going to show up and say,
we have the right one.
That's not the, that's not the original.
So we're hoping that they don't make one and they put the right one up.
We're hoping they do the right thing.
Yep.
You know, we did the right thing. We could have kept it. We could have put it on eBay. We could have, you know, we got connections where we could have reached out to other sources.
Oh, my God.
They're big supporters of the Red Sox.
Connections.
And we want to see them win, and we want this banner to go back on Lansdowne Street or wherever it belongs.
Holy cow. That is not made up. That's how two people actually sound that are from Boston their whole lives.
Wow.
I felt like being back at Thanksgiving dinner. It's a banner. Ka, pa.
He's like, Louie, what is that? What is it? I'm like, I don't know. I don't. What is it?
I love the whole, like, we got to get something
what
for it.
What is that?
It.
Yeah, I mean.
We got to get something.
Well, we're big Red Sox supporters,
but
you know, we know some people we can get this to.
Yeah, we know people.
We know people.
Yeah.
we want something for it.
What are you digging bodies out of the marsh in the scene from The Departed? What is this? It's a banner. They could make like 1,000 of them if they want
to give it back to them because it belongs to them and it doesn't belong to us.
Yeah. But
in reciprocation, we would like, you know, maybe to go to a nice playoff game or we're looking for something. We just don't want to hand it over to them.
Don't you love it when dumb people use big words? I mean, reciprocation for that dude must have been his brain must have been blowing out. That's awesome, man. That's one of the funniest things. You got to see the video that goes along with these two dudes, like, unfurling this.
Did they give it back?
No! They're holding it hostage. They want to get, some primo tickets.
For the playoffs. Not games. Not games now.
Yeah, how will the Red Sox ever go on without getting that banner back? If you get $5 for it on eBay, fellas, go for it. The banner's like 30 feet long. You can't just hang it up. What are you going to hang it off the side of your house? What exactly are you going to do with this? You know what, fellas? I'd keep it in a brown paper bag and unfurl it at potties. Your weekly Red Solo Cup potties. That is where I grew up. Can you believe that? Somerville. Just outside of Boston. I didn't grow up in Somerville, thank God. There you go, Alfred.
Way to go. Those are your peeps.
Those are my peeps. Those are my peeps. That's what dumb people in Boston sound like.
Hey, let me tell you something. This is wicked awful, all right?
Maybe that's what smart people in Boston sound like. This is The Drive on the Fan.
It's The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
I know CU has a bye week this week. And I'm glad. The timing is good. Not for the players or for the coaches, but for the mascot Chip, who I want to salute because the video of him shooting himself in the gonads with a air gun to shoot out t-shirts is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And now there's multiple views of it. There's the camera from the stands that has it, and now there's a video from just a few feet off to his side, and Chip didn't do it by himself, Al. He had a helper because it's some sort of air compressor that shoots the t-shirt far further than you can throw it. Now, Chip was trying to help out the CU students. And if you haven't been to Folsom Field, Al, you know that the student section is actually not right on the field, is it? There's a black embankment that kind of rises up to the student section, right?
Yeah.
So to get a t-shirt, like, to the student section is... You need an air-compressed air gun. I don't think a human being in a mascot outfit could get the ball that high, but... So Chip has a guy with him while he's performing this stunt. There's another human with Chip that's got the, you know, the air. The tank. with the tube that goes up to the gun.
What do you think, D?
I think they handed Chip the gun. They said, all right, you're loaded. I don't think he can see anything out of the head of his costume. He had no idea he was pointing the air gun at his nads.
You think it's the same mascot next Friday when we take on USC?
Alfred, he had to be carted off, which is part of the video.
I know.
he's cheering.
I feel bad for Chip, man.
Garrett Bowles thought this was brave. He was... I have never seen a mascot carted off after firing a wadded-up T-shirt at his jewels.
I would have took that head off so fast, though. I mean, that costume, I would have probably ruined some kid's day. Oh, my goodness, Dad, he took his head off.
So we want to salute Chip, the CU mascot who took it like a man. Because I'm assuming because of his reaction, there was a dude in that costume, not a girl. Just an assumption on my part. Thank you, Chip. Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's a lot of PSI on that, man. It's funny, period. But then to see his reaction as he's being carted off, as he's pumping his right hoof and you know, waving at all the fans, still with a smile on his face, by the way. A smile never came off Chip's face.
Do you think that was choreographed?
The player... No, because you can't just
Somebody would have had a better view of it, huh?
You can't use up medical personnel with
I'll say this. I think I'm starting to read some reports that the gun could have malfunctioned and he could have not actually shot himself, but the gun could have malfunctioned.
Dude, he had it pointed in the wrong direction. Well, if it malfunctioned or whatever,
he kept in...
He didn't take his head off.
He did not take his head off. I would have threw that thing so far from my body.
Al, what do you think it would take for you to be in a Chip the Buffalo
mascot? I don't know. Maybe I'll do it one day and then, you know, run out at halftime.
This is the sideline view.
Don't let your dreams be dreams.
Helper's got it. Hey, everybody ready? Here we go. 3, 2. Ow! Sorry. Okay.
What's the day, the first day you've seen it?
No, I saw it yesterday, okay. Too, but... I didn't see this sideline. Barstool, Colorado. I didn't know there was a Barstool Sports Colorado version. That's cool. probably been around for a while. I just didn't know it.
Hey, let me ask you something.
Yes, back to more serious things. Yes, Alfred.
You know, we're going to see the Baltimore Ravens, you know, one more time. And, of course, the architect to this team is none other than Ozzie Newsome. As a GM, the guy has been outstanding. He's been fabulous as a GM with this draft pick. I think that he will have drafted at least 4 Hall of Fame players when it's all said and done. Ray Lewis, Jonathan Ogden, Terrell Suggs, I think is going to be in that category, and Ed Reed. What do you think about the job that he's done versus the job that Elway's done through 8 years as the GM for the Denver Broncos?
I'm sorry. Say that again.
How do you compare their
John Elway?
Yeah.
You want me to assess John Elway as a GM?
As a GM, his first pick is a Hall of Famer in Von Miller.
Oh, see, you're asking me a very loaded question then.
I mean, he couldn't have started any better than what he did.
Okay.
So, yeah, how did he compare, though?
You're discounting the real story of that pick.
It's under his direction.
Okay, and then I'm not going to play this game with you.
Well, then,
because if you can't talk about the reality of the situation, then
what's
it's
the reality?
Not, you know what? If you're not even going to say what the reality of the situation is, I'm not going to have the conversation.
He was just settling into the position, but it was under his watch.
Then John's been great, Al.
No,
he's been fantastic.
That was the really on
for
first
you to
round
call
draft pick.
Von Miller John Elway's pick is ridiculous.
Was he the GM?
Okay. This is where you want to go, so I'll say John's done great.
Well, I don't know if picked all of those players in Baltimore is what I'm saying. How can you definitively say that Ozzie Newsome picked all of those Hall of Fame players there in Baltimore?
If you want to start a conversation about John Elway as a GM, and you really, really want to start with John picked a Hall of Famer with his first pick.
He did.
And ignore... Okay, then
what do you want to say? Do you want to say that he did not pick him?
You want to talk the truth?
Yeah,
or do you just want to have a
tell me your truth. Tell me your truth.
It's not my truth. It's the truth.
Okay, tell me your truth.
I'm not going to tell you
the matter is that he was
a GM. I'm going to tell you the truth.
Okay, go ahead and tell me a truth. Because I told you a truth. If you have another one, go ahead.
Why don't you just talk about how great John is? Because that's what you want to say.
No, I didn't. I'm telling you that Ozzie in his first 2 picks picked 2 Hall of Famers.
Who?
Jonathan Ogden and Ray Lewis.
His first 2 picks is the Ravens GM.
Yes.
How long had he been on the job before he...
That was the first year.
First year. And how many years had he been a GM before that?
I don't think any before that because
he was not allowed to
be the GM in Cleveland, I think, is which... I think he was assistant GM.
What was
or something.
His job before?
I can't find any news on that, so I'm not sure.
All right, so 95, Ozzie Newsome was the director of pro personnel for the Cleveland Browns.
There you go.
96, he was the VP of player personnel and de facto general manager from 96 to 2001 and became the official general manager in 2002.
And when was the pick of Ray Lewis?
1996.
1996, that's when Ray Lewis was picked?
Jonathan Ogden, Ray Lewis.
Is that right? So he had been on the job for a full year as director of pro personnel before he became GM, correct? Yes or no?
What are you trying to get at?
Yes or no?
Yes or no what? He was with the team? He was with the team?
He was the director of pro personnel.
Pro personnel.
For a full year.
Yeah, pro personnel.
Before he was the GM.
Yeah, pro personnel.
So he knew the whole system, had been working there for a full year.
Okay.
And had known all the ins and outs of how to go about this and what to do. Correct?
He worked in pro personnel.
Okay. What did he do before he was pro personnel?
He worked in the organization. He retired from the...
What was his job before he was pro personnel?
Let me explain, okay? He retired from the NFL in 1990. I don't know when he began with the Browns officially in the front office, but his last year as a player was 1990. I just remember him coming out doing an opening ceremony while I was playing with the Cincinnati Bengals. He walked, he had just retired, and I was playing for the Cincinnati Bengals when he was.
I'm just asking a very specific question, by the way. We can just look it up Wikipedia.
Congratulated on his great career,
right,
but 1990.
I'll look up Wikipedia.
2000 was. 1990 was his last year. So I don't know when he was in the front office for the Browns. It may have been 1992, maybe a year off, and I'm guessing.
Right. So here's
the first official year as a GM was 1996.
1996. Okay, I'm curious what he did before that, because you're amping me up to a... You want to say kind of a ridiculous thing.
Which is what?
And I'm not letting you get away with it.
What's the ridiculous thing that I'm saying?
Ozzie Newsome had... I'm trying to figure out how long he was an executive for. 90. What did he do from 91 to 90? And he was with the Ravens from 91 to 95?
Well, Browns, yes.
With the Browns. Sorry. So he spent five seasons...
Right.
As an executive, as a personnel person.
Yes.
5 years.
Yes.
Before he got the GM job.
Yes.
What was John Elway doing for 5 years before he was in your words?
I don't know.
And he actually wasn't the GM, by the way. He was not the GM on his first draft.
What?
He was the executive president of football or some sort of thing. He wasn't the GM.
He's not the GM now either.
Yes, he is the GM now.
Is the president and GM?
Yes, he has been for a couple years.
Elway's first year was the director of player personnel.
Yeah, he was
the executive VP of football operations, de facto general manager.
So who was the general manager?
Brian Sanders.
Was he the general manager of note?
Yes.
So it was his NFL draft?
Yes, of course. John was on the job for 2 months.
So you're saying that John does not take credit for the...
John Elway barely knew where the bathrooms were in the executive suite when the draft came.
You're saying
that's the truth, Al. And for you to sugarcoat it another way
I'm not
crazy.
Sugarcoating it.
No,
because
John Elway should get credit.
No credit?
For the first draft. He was learning the job.
Credit? When should he get credit or blame for any draft?
After he fired Brian Sanders.
What year was that?
2 years later.
2012 was the first draft without Brian Sanders.
Right. If you want to look at something, that's when John Elway said, I got this. And before that, it was always with Brian Sanders. After that, he was on his own. As soon as he fired Brian Sanders, that's when John Elway as a GM started.
When was he named general manager?
After he fired Brian Sanders.
No. Because you said he wasn't GM. And you said officially he was just added to... GM was added to his title 2 years ago, right?
2013.
Three.
So I guess 2013 is when we can start looking at his drafts then.
Okay.
Is that fair?
He held the same title as Ozzie Newsome, de facto general manager in 2012. So you can count the 2012 year.
All right. We'll count the 2012 year. But that's not Von Miller's year.
It's not.
So I'll give him credit for 2012 on.
Wow. I can't believe you saying that John Elway... under his leadership, was not responsible for Von Miller's draft.
He wasn't even close. He wasn't even close. He had been hired in like January or something, and the draft's in April. They had been working on the draft for a full year.
If you're over football operations, are you over the...
I'm surprised you want to make this kind of weird, petty little argument.
No. Let me ask you this.
Because you know what the truth
is. Who hired John Fox?
John Fox was hired by John Elway.
Wait a minute. What the general manager usually hires the head coach.
I don't know. What are you talking about?
I'm telling you.
John Fox was hired by John Elway.
But then John Elway is responsible for Von Miller's draft.
Okay. We could have cut to this when you brought it up and you made a... I just want to agree with you. Because your unacceptance of the truth really is annoying, to be quite honest with you. And if you just want to say John's the best.
Ozzie Newsome was awesome as a general manager
as the GM for
the Ravens. And to say that you have four guys that were drafted that are Hall of Famers, that is unbelievable.
You want to start with John Elway?
We have one guy, and John has been in that position for 8 years.
See, hiring the coach and being in charge of personnel is two totally different things.
No, it's not, because the buck stops with you.
Al, in this case, it is.
The buck stops with you when you are the director or whatever you are.
In my opinion,
when you are the last guy that says yes or no to everything that happens with the organization,
then why didn't you just agree with me? Why didn't you just agree with me when I said John's the best? Why did you want to engage with him?
Ozzie's much better than him.
Okay,
Ozzie's
fine.
Much better. Ozzie's much better.
That's a completely different question.
Asking you about the jobs that the two have done in their first 8 years, if you had to take the eight-year history.
And Ozzie Newsome. John Elway's been horrific in the draft. Terrible. He's been a very mediocre general manager. Extremely.
Mm.
But everybody wants to give him credit for winning a Super Bowl, and I can't argue that.
Wait a minute. You don't give him credit for that?
Sure, I'll give him credit for that.
No, I'm just saying.
You're exhausting.
Does he get credit for getting getting here? Do you get credit for going to the first Super Bowl and get blown out to the Seattle Seahawks?
Everything.
No, I'm just saying.
But if you want to say Ozzie Newsom's a better GM, I'll agree with you.
Through the first 8 years, no, there's no question about
through
it.
Through the first 8 years, through the first 10 years, through the first whatever.
I don't know about 10 years.
Is John about to make some sort of comeback?
I don't know, but this last draft has been unbelievable. This is the greatest draft that he's ever had besides...
Really? Is it the greatest draft he's ever had?
The greatest draft that he's ever had.
Okay, which player drafted is making the biggest impact?
Which player that's drafted? Maybe Josie Jewell right now.
All right, I want everybody to chew on that. Is that the best draft ever? The biggest impact player is Josie Jewell so far.
Or you can go Chubb. You can go Chubb because he's a starter. You go Chubb because he's a starter. But he hasn't had a huge impact.
You didn't say that. You said Josie Jewell.
Josie Jewell or Chubb because both of them are playing.
You can choose whatever you want. Chubb.
Or Royce Freeman if you want to. Cortland Sutton is going to be great.
The truth, everybody.
This is a great draft.
I'll give you another truth.
This is a great draft.
The truth is the best rookie for the Broncos right now is a guy that went undrafted.
Wait a minute. Did we acquire him?
I didn't. You said draft.
This is the best draft he's had.
Okay. Philip Lindsay was not drafted.
I didn't say that Philip Lindsay was the best player in this draft.
Oh,
these two are clearly having issues with each other. So I'm going to give them 2 minutes to think about what they've done.
Philip Lindsay is clearly, so far through 2 weeks, the best rookie on the Broncos.
I didn't say that he was a drafted guy.
Because he
wasn't. I'm just telling you that this draft
in particular, know where you're going.
This draft is outstanding. What are you doing? Are you saying that John Elway's not responsible for any of the success that the Broncos have had over the last eight years?
No, I didn't say that either.
You must have. You said, I guess you can give him credit for the Super Bowl. What was that?
I'll turn around. John Elway was amazing when he drafted Von Miller. It was incredible.
Amazing.
How he took over after knowing nothing and never working in pro personnel at all. And he came in January, and 3.5 months later, it was like him and him alone that saw Von Miller.
I didn't say him and him alone.
No, John was spectacular.
Is he over football operations?
We got to take a break. KKFN Longmont, Denver. Now we don't have to play legal ID. That's how that works. Yeah, I know. Big Sexy's yelling at us. I got it.
Wow, you just don't like Elway. I just never knew it that you hated him that much.
Way to go off on a strong point. Here is Mark Schlereth.
It's your daily exclamation mark with Mark Schlereth. Brought to you by Shomp BMW.
Mike Evans. K-O-D. Kiss of death.
Oh, geez.
He essentially said last week, your Colorado Rockies are a shoo-in to win the NL West. He said they turned the corner. That's what he said. He essentially said they've turned the corner. They go 7-3, the most pivotal homestand ever. And I mean, obviously the Giants are ready to roll over. They handle their business. All they got to do is win 1 of 3 against the Dodgers. And don't pay any attention to the lead. It's the loss column you got to watch. And the Rockies are in great shape. Can you guys say Jinxy Cat?
Hello, Jinx.
Jinxy Cat. You want to blame anybody for the Rockies' woes?
Oh, geez.
Don't look at the 177 batting average. No. Don't look at that. Look at my partner, Mike Evans. Mike Evans, Jinxy Cat. I don't even have anything to say other than you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Mark Schlereth and Mike Evans tomorrow morning at 6 on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.